We present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with an extract from The Guardian's obituary of Ian Richardson, read by Rory Morrison.
In his golden years at the Royal Shakespeare Company from 1960 to 1975, he played a long line of leading roles, from Richard II to Richard III.
And our thanks to Jeremy Cross for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Clive Anderson. And opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Catelyn Moran. Francis, sir, we're going to start with a musical clue for you.
I was going to go to class before I got high.
Come on, y'all.
Check it out. I could have cheated and I could have passed, but I got high. I'm taking it next semester and I know why. Yeah, because I got high. Because I got high.
Go to the next.
Francis, who was grassed up by the Sunday papers this week?
I think it's Druggy Dave, isn't it?
It is.
The leader of Her Majesty's Conservative Party. I think he misunderstood the phrase high Tory. He hasn't quite admitted to smoking dope at school and university, but he hasn't quite denied it either, and he sort of admitted it. He comes out with all these weird formulations saying, I have a past which is private. I did things when I was young that perhaps I shouldn't have done. It's not your business, and this is your business.
The slogan used to be drugs, just say no. Now it's drugs, just say no comment.
But I think it's also because people think he's being evasive. I think it's just he can't remember. The whole of his childhood passed in a blur, and he was out of his head for most of his university years, which is a normal qualification, actually, for becoming the
Conservative Party. He was a member of the Bullingdon Club. There's wonderful photographs of him with Boris Johnson
and
a lot of other people like that in bizarre dinner jackets. And the object of the club was to destroy your surroundings. That's what the object was, which is a bit unsettling if it's a Tory leader.
I think it explains the slightly sort of hippie-ish tinge of Dave's Tories these days, all their lovely new conservative groovy policies.
You think it's drug-affected?
Tie into that.
I'm now imagining Tory candidates going around and knocking on doors to get votes, and younger voters answering the door and saying, can you get me some then? Is this a delivery service? You obviously know where to get some.
Yes, indeed. After this week, I would bet that David Cameron's not very fond of the papers, except, you know, those really long ones sold by Rizzler. He has advised people against taking drugs following the revelation that he was embroiled in a cannabis scandal whilst a pupil at Eton. He was actually a pupil at Windsor Comprehensive, but he'd smoked so much dope he thought for a brief while he was upper class. Clive, why are the best years of your life the worst in the Western world?
Children in this country have the worst upbringing of anywhere in the Western world or any world. There's 21 countries. We are 21st. My children told me about this. They said that we don't pay our children enough attention. I think that's what they said anyway. They get bad education, they're badly treated, relationships, drugs.
Because we're spoilt for choice. I mean, the ones that came top were the Dutch. It's a very simple life. You only have two sorts of cheese to decide between.
No,
when you go out together, you share the bill.
But isn't it all a matter of interpretation, though? I mean, I looked at that league table, I actually felt quite proud. I thought, you know, we're the highest for managing to have sex before you're 16, which many 15-year-olds I know would think a massive achievement. We drink the most, we smoke the most, we're out and about the most. And then you see that the polls come the highest for not having sex before you get to the age of 16, and they're not drinking, and they're not having fun, and they're not out. And I just thought there's going to be even more polls now moving to this country, just going, well, where's the sex? Where's the booze? Where's the drink? This looks like the happy fun land to me.
2 points to Clive. The UK is the worst place in the developed world to be a child, according to a study by UNICEF. According to an author of the report, the problem stemmed from underinvestment and the dog-eat-dog aspect of British society. Surprisingly, they didn't pick up on the more worrying dog-eat-child aspect of British society. Catelyn, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Who encountered an unexpected jam on the information superhighway?
I know on Valentine's Day, Google, the only internet thing I know, and for Valentine's Day, they made the E on the end a strawberry dipped in chocolate to convey love and sex and romance, but forgot to put the L in, so for one day, Google was just googe. Which may have been some kind of reference to some kind of love act, I don't know.
It sounds messy, anyway.
Alan's sneak me a note that says Blair's emails, but I still don't know.
Okay.
Blair asked this one, it is this one,
yes,
isn't it? Blair asked this wonderful question. Having failed to ask our opinion on whether we should kill Iraqis or have a health service or have education or anything else, he has reached a really serious point, whether we should pay for our road tolls. So he asked everybody to.
Oh, yes, no,
and they all wrote in and said, amazingly, no, we'd rather not have them, thanks.
Mm. I did know that. Yes. Because over a million people have signed it, haven't they? And that's seen as a big thing, and we should all take that into consideration. But as far as I remember, last time it went round, over 2 million people had signed a petition saying that Jedi should be officially recognised as a religion in this country from the Star Wars film.
Has that not happened?
No, I don't think it has.
What was last week, though, was the Transport Secretary, this Douglas Alexander, said he was going to listen to this, but he also felt pretty sure that when he announced his proposals, there would be an equivalent petition with as many signatures supporting government policy. 2 million people writing in supporting it.
Mr. A. Campbell's
getting a long, long way. He's really got the hang of this thing. People who support government policy tend not to write angry emails, number 10.
1.5 million people have signed an e-petition. A horrible idea. On the Prime Minister's website, calling for the road pricing proposals to be scrapped. Apparently, the plans were drawn up by the previous Transport Secretary, Alistair Darling. Do you think there's a clue in the word previous? Do you think? The present and presumably temporary Transport Secretary, Douglas Alexander, has been accused of spectacularly miscalculating the amount of traffic on Britain's roads. But that's probably because he got the Home Office to count it, I imagine. I've got a quick supplementary question. Why are we not getting good mileage out of our parliamentarians?
Because they're all spending all this money. I'm not going anywhere. There's a woman who's driven to the moon and back, and she lives somewhere like Hendon.
My MP, who's the MP for Islington North, he rides a bike, and his expenses are, I think, £130 for riding his bike. Now, I don't know whether to be pleased about that. That's not very much money. But what can you do as a cyclist? That's not enough to buy a bike, and it's an awful lot for puncture repair kits. So I don't...
My MP's Frank Dobson, and he feels his way slowly along the wall.
I understood that there was one woman who lived in the home counties who'd done over 60,000 miles, they reckon, enough to go to the moon and back. And everyone was like, well, how could she have done that? But I remember last time I had to go and pick up a mattress from John Lewis. I was driving around for an hour and a half trying to find somewhere to park, and that clocked up the mileage pretty quickly. She was probably just looking for somewhere to park.
MPs are claiming almost £5 million a year at the taxpayers' expense to travel by car, taxi, plane and bicycle. Although David Cameron didn't bother to claim the 20 pence a mile he's due for cycling from his Notting Hill home to the Commons. It's probably too stoned to remember. So 2 points to Catelyn. Alan, why is it not a gay day for the C of E?
There are 9 ways of answering this. One of them might involve Roman Catholics. Apparently, even as we broadcast, a man is wading ashore carrying an incense burner, and he's going to now tip the scales so that now our major religion is Roman Catholic.
And that's the answer to the supplementary question, so an extra point there, too.
Well, it's, can't look, it's always a gay
day. It's like Roger Federer of the news quiz.
Because there was a report from the Catholic Church saying that they'd been surprised by the swelling in their ranks, and I thought, well, that's celibacy for you.
It's Rowan Atkinson, the Archbishop of Thing, who's probably said something about homosexuals.
My favourite headline, gay sex splits bishops. Yes.
It's happening in Africa or somewhere, isn't it? Isn't it Tanzania they're going to have the split?
Yes, extra point to Clive for a little bit of detail there.
Dar es Salaam, I think you'll find.
Okay, let's just take that point away for smugness. This week, Archbishop Rowan Williams flew to a synod in Tanzania to try and prevent a schism in the Anglican Church over homosexuality. And the other question was, a study this week predicted that Catholicism may become the dominant religion in the UK as immigration from Eastern European countries continues to grow. People will do anything for a free biscuit and a drop of wine. So, at the end of round one, Francis and Clive have got 5 points, but Alan and Catelyn are in the lead with 6. We start round two with a cutting from Lancashire County Council's Vision newsletter.
All application and renewal fees for Blue Badge parking permits are being abolished from February. The badges allow people who are registered blind to park near shops, stations and other facilities.
And our thanks to Valerie Fillingham for sending that in. Francis, who's trying to shift the axis of evil a little further east?
This isn't to do with North Korea, is it?
Not yet.
Not yet?
No. But I'll give you a point later on for that.
All right. Yeah. Well, there are only three countries in the excess of evil, as far as I know. Iran?
Yeah.
Well, it's Bush. He's been claiming that Iran is up to no good for a long time, and he may or may not be about to attack it.
But he had a specific claim
about them supplying the insurgents in Iraq. Mm. And he's now, he's actually sort of slightly retreating from that a bit, I think. He produced a bit of evidence, but he then said that, I'm not saying that Iran is the only supplier of that. Is that it?
Yeah, I mean, he basically pointed at them and went, you're very bad, and then they said, we'll do something about it, and he went, no, I'm just kidding. I've got a quick supplementary question, which I think France may know the answer to.
North Korea.
Yes.
Can I get a point for having actually been to North Korea?
Ooh.
Ooh, no.
Actually, the news quiz nearly stopped me going there, because I was in Beijing. You had to go to China and apply for a tourist visa and pretend not to be a journalist. And so I said, no, I'm a tourist. Not a journalist at all. I'm a farmer in Essex. And then this message came back from Pyongyang one night saying that they'd noticed I did this thing called the news quiz on the BBC. And the words news and BBC, they put together and thought, hang on. So I then had to persuade them, had to send messages back to North Korea saying, no, 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 you don't understand. In English, news has two meanings. There's news as in news and news as in novelties, innovations. And it's a comedy show, and I got the then producer of news quiz to fax everything, which said BBC Light Entertainment. I said, look, Light Entertainment, it's comedy, and it's a comedy thing about innovations in agriculture. It's a weekly show, very popular. Actually, it's quite plausible, really, when you think of Veg Talk. The weekly comedy show about innovations in agriculture. The only problem was, when I was actually in North Korea, the minder from the ministry, if we were out in the countryside, he'd say, oh, look, Mr. Bean, you know, there's a plowshare over there. Tell us one of your famous English comedy farmer jokes.
Are you telling me that in Pyongyang they're listening to the news quiz?
No, they're not. No. There is a file on the news quiz saying this is a popular weekly British comedy show about farming. As indeed it is.
Can I just say, if you are listening in North Korea, I do admire your tailoring. Now, apparently, North Korea has agreed to end all nuclear activities in return for fuel oil from the Americans, and the United States, in return, is also going to normalize diplomatic relations, eventually remove North Korea from the axis of evil and replace it with Peterborough. So I think, to be fair, France has got the extra point there. Clive, have a listen to some music. It's coming home, it's coming home, it's coming home. It's coming home, it's coming home, it's coming home, it's coming home, it's coming home. What a fantastic lyric.
It is a fantastic lyric, that, because it's all based on the idea it's about time England won the World Cup again, and it's going to be usable from now until the end of time. This is Gordon Brown's idea. Mm-hmm. He has announced his support for England staging the World Cup in 2018, which is, 11 years' time, which is a good idea in a sense, because 11 years' time, by then, Theo Walcott will be playing regularly for Arsenal. Wayne Rooney will have matured into not swearing at referees, and Wembley Stadium will be just about finished, so we'll all be ready for that. And who knows, even Tony Blair may have stopped being Prime Minister, and Gordon Brown will be in place. So, yes, let's go ahead, let's have the World Cup in England. But he's offering support for this before anyone's actually said they want to do it. The FA hadn't applied to do it yet. FIFA, who organise it, haven't even decided which continent it's going to be in yet. And Gordon Brown's on the telly sort of smiling away, saying, yes, great to have England winning the World Cup in England. But possibly Scotland winning as well, because he has to remember he's Scottish. So it's a slightly dodgy PR story, possibly more connected with promoting Gordon Brown than World Cup. Possibly, I don't know.
He's such a Mr. Fun these days, isn't he? Old Gordon, I used to think of him as being Mr. Grimm. Now all he does is talk about listening to the Arctic Monkeys while he's taking his gym jams off in the morning and rushing off to Wembley Stadium saying, I love football, me.
I prefer him when he looks stern. When he puts that smile on, it's sort of...
He's back in his box. It's much nicer when we never saw him. Once a year at the budget.
Gordon Brown, that mascot of fitness, has pledged to bring the 2018 World Cup to England, despite the cost of the 2012 Olympics rocketing even higher. So I was thinking, if he loses the World Cup, at least he can concentrate on the Premiership.
Yay!
Alan, why are hopeful subjects subject to an inquiry?
Subject to it? Why is Clive Anderson smiling?
It's the first I've ever been on this programme, and you've got a completely blank look. You've no idea what the question is about. Just admit it and say this.
The answer was about citizenship, but there were so many citizenship stories. There was one that the Citizenship Institute that was teaching citizenship in Sheffield and getting 100% passes
was shut down by the police because it was a bit suspicious. But the main one is, I think, the one that you're driving at and Clive is being smugly interceptive of, is that we're all going to have to learn English.
Brilliantly, you've answered both the question and the supplementary in the same.
Do we seem to be answering all the questions out of order this week?
Is there... It's like that two Ronnie sketch.
The clues are so difficult, we can't work out what this answer is. We're just volunteering things we hope might come up later.
Anything that you happen to know. First of all, there was this place getting 100% answers, and it turned out to be a little bit on the dodgy side. Mm.
They'd nicked them, hadn't they? They'd nicked the questions, and I think that shows they do understand how to be a British citizen, because... last week, we were top of the theft table, yep. So they've come over here, perfectly honest Poles and Africans and all sorts, and they think, oh, well, how can we fit in? Well, we'll steal stuff then. Well, let's steal the answer to this question. You've got to know, you know, the name of the Queen and how to form queues and all that sort of stuff that we regard as very British.
But there's also this thing that from April, people who are unemployed specifically, I think, are going to have to show that they're making an effort to learn English. Mm. Presumably a cruel trick on John Prescott. He's about to become unemployed, and he's going to have to really make an effort.
Four employees of a community training centre in South Yorkshire have been arrested after allegations that up to 1,000 immigrants may have paid for test results to give them British citizenship. The Immigration and Nationality Directorate have promised to revoke the citizenship of anyone found to have become British fraudulently. And on an unrelated note, this is my last news quiz. New show on Holloway Prison Radio. At the end of round two, Francis and Clive have got 11 points, and Alan and Captain have got the same. Before we start round three, here's a cutting from the BBC News website.
The public have a worrying lack of knowledge and understanding of sex, a survey suggests. On sex education, only 4% said their experience at school was excellent. 28% described it as poor, and 18% said they didn't get any.
Thanks to the very many people who sent that in. Francis, why was the line, age cannot wither her, coined in error?
There's a coin that's gone on display in Newcastle, and on one side there's the head of Cleopatra, and the other there's Mark Antony. And the paper's got tremendously excited, saying it shows that she wasn't as beautiful as we thought. Actually, these coins have been around, well, obviously, for 2,000 years, rather more than 2,000 years now. And it's one of the British Museum, it's ancient history, in real sense of the phrase. But it's come as news that Cleopatra was not this blushing beauty. And actually, Antony wasn't much right home, but they looked eerily like John Prescott and Margaret Beckett, in fact. Horrible combination, rather than Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor. But that's what it is, I think.
I thought it was a bit unfair. I thought, you know, perhaps she wasn't ugly. Maybe she just didn't chisel well.
Well, she was really ugly. You know, when they brought the aspen, it took three people to hold it down before it broke.
But on a coin, it's not surprising she looks a bit brassy. I mean,
But I'm surprised that it's assumed that this is a fair representation of her on this coin. It might not be the artist to blame rather than Cleopatra. Looked to me as if it might be Madame Tussauds. It's rubbish.
Here's a supplementary answer. This week they put Kate Moss in Madame Tussauds. I'll have a point for that. You must have been about to answer that.
It's the discovery of a coin dating from 32 BC and featuring the less than flattering profiles of Cleopatra and her lover Mark Antony, and it has disproved the belief that she was a great beauty and he extremely handsome. Of course, we've never looked at anybody on a coin and gone, cool. Clive, who held up a mirror to the European Parliament and didn't like what he saw?
Bizarrely, Robert Kilroy Silk has been looking in mirrors in shops and decided they're distorting mirrors. Mm. They make you look all orangey. And for some reason, he raised this in the European Parliament. And I think it was just a rhetorical flourish. He mentioned, oh, and they used distorting mirrors in Marks and Spencer. I don't think he really was meaning to pick on Marks and Spencer. But it's true, and I'm here to tell you this, that clothes shops do this. A few years ago, when I was on the telly for a no-budget spared thing, I was taken to be bought a suit in a shop, and I said, wouldn't it be funny if they had distorting mirrors in shops that made you look sort of slimmer and taller, and then you'd be more inclined to buy the clothes? And the costume person who was with me and the assistant there, they sort of looked at their feet and sort of shuffled, and I said, what do you mean by that? I said, well, don't you all shops do this? You're so naive not to know this. So what I thought was me being wittily satirical was just me being slow and out of date. So he
he's onto something about why he thinks the European Parliament is going to intervene on
this
his
is done my cutting, I shall have to throw away, because there was a misprint in the Telegraph which said, the whole practice tarnishes the image of Marks and Spencer and its reputation for integrity, said European Parliament MP Mr. Robert Kilroy Slick.
Now you're even doing the clippings out of order. This is just...
Hello and welcome to the news quiz. Robert Kilroy Silk, who always has his finger on the pulse, has written to Marks and Spencer calling for allegedly distorting mirrors to be withdrawn from their changing rooms. Apparently he raised it because he said his wife, Jan, and his daughter Natasha said that the mirrors were making them look slim. And he thought, why bring this up? What are you saying? I know them at home. They're actually fat. It's very bizarre. Catelyn, which TV doctor was told you're not what you think?
See, I know this one. It's about trashy TV. I'm on my home ground. It was Dr. Gillian McKeith.
Yeah, we said we're not allowed to call her doctor.
Oh, sorry, yes, non-Dr. Gillian McKeith, yes. Just plain old Gillian McKeith.
Her doctorate is a PhD in holistic nutrition, which she got on a distance learning course from an uncredited college in America.
The college is actually called the College of Holistic Nutrition, which suggests it's a rather narrow university. You can't turn up and say, I'd like to learn Mandarin. Piss off, we only do holistic nutrition.
It's supposed to be a program about nutrition, but I don't know if you've watched it, but every week she'll just really ostentatiously put on a gas mask and go into someone's bathroom and say, this is the worst poo I've ever seen. Obviously, you can see why she didn't have a proper doctorate in that, because as far as I know, there isn't a university in the world that teaches you how to grade poo. And if there is, that's the degree I think I could do.
She's done herself a power of poo, because people who have PhDs, who insist on calling themselves doctor, I mean, Dr. John Reed. Oh. She really wanted to be in the company. Dr. Henry Kissinger, Dr. Ian Paisley. So she's much better off without it.
So she can't use her title on television anymore. So is this same applied to Doctor Who? Is it going to be Who?
Yes. But she also, did you see, she had to withdraw. She was selling these erotic pills. Called Horny Goatweed Complex. And,
they're very good. Oh, really?
The threat of an investigation by the Advertising Standards Authority has led to diet guru Gillian McKeith voluntarily dropping the title Doctor from her products, and she's no longer allowed to prefix her name with the title, although everyone else is still allowed to prefix her name with that strange woman who looks at poo. I don't mind John Reed calling himself Doctor. I mind him calling himself Home Secretary. Alan, have a listen to this.
1, 2, 3, 4... Get on up, get up, get on up, stay on the scene, get on up, like a tax machine, get on up, get up, get on up.
Alan, I don't wish to pry, but are you looking forward to getting it over the counter?
It's about Viagra. You don't need a prescription in Manchester to get a hard-on. You just go into a chemist and say, this is a gun. Can I have some Viagra, please?
It doesn't matter if I'm pleased to see you or not.
No. Do you give me the Viagra?
Well, except you can't get it straight away. That's the thing. There was a very cruel piece in the Evening Standard, because on Valentine's Day was the first day they put it on sale. And so this guy sort of pitched up and they gave his name. You know, he's 39 and he's a shop fitter and he's coming here to get his Viagra. But the rules are that you go in and you say you want some and then you have an appointment and then you can come back on Monday and pick it up. And they've just got this guy talking about getting, yes, you know, I haven't been able to please my wife for a while, so I've come in to get this. So not only has he been exposed in the paper as being impotent, but he has to wait until Monday to get his pill. That was one of the worst days of his life.
So it was very good because the spokesman for Boots, the chemist, apologised because they had created the impression that the Viagra tablets would be available on Valentine's Day. And the spokesman used the unfortunate expression, he said, I'm terribly sorry, this hasn't happened before.
But it's on the basis, apparently, that men are embarrassed to go into their doctors to ask for Viagra, but they're not embarrassed to go into a busy Boots or Superdrug or something and say, excuse me, can I have some of those impotence pills, please?
I've had wrinkles around my eyes as a result of an operation we don't want to go into. And the doctor said, well, here's a prescription for this. If you rub this in, it will improve the wrinkles around your eyes. And I went into Hodgetts, the chemist in St. John's Wood, and said, I'd like some Anusol. And they said, it's Anusol. I had never made that connection. Anyway, it's very good for your eyes.
Viagra has gone on sale over the counter at branches of Boots in Manchester for £50, although as many disappointed men found out not in time for Valentine's Day. According to The Sun, a sex therapist commenting on the Viagra revolution said it'll be huge. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
Sandy, this has been sent in by my dear cousin, Penelope Utting. It's from the Petersfield Post. More than 30 people from Sheep Street in Spain have formed a residents' association. The next meeting is to be in February, where a daft constitution will be considered.
Clive.
This is from Pam Morgan of Winchester, sent this in recently. It says, this fantastic 4-in-1 pest repeller has electromagnetic, ultrasonic, ionic and auto-sensing nightlight functions in an all-in-one attractive plug-in unit. Ideal for helping with the control of rats, mice, spiders, cockroaches, ants, fleas, mites, squirrels and more. Safe for household pets, except mice, rats, gerbils, guinea pigs, squirrels, things and tarantulas.
Catelyn.
Mine's a recipe from the early 18th century for bear paws. Take the bear paws, clean them, put salt on them, then put water on the fire, cook them soft. When they are soft, take them and cut them lengthwise. Melt butter in a pot, coat the paws in butter, then take the breadcrumbs, season them with herbs and salt, put crumbs on the paws, then put them on the grill, then when you need them, fry them, then prepare them, then put browned butter on top and put lemons with it and it's ready. I think it's easy to see why that didn't catch on.
Alan.
I've thrown away Kilroy silk. This is costing me a fortune in small eyeglasses.
Do you just keep cutting in your wallet in lieu of money?
There's a €5 note there.
I'm afraid I can't give you the £5 for that Starbucks coffee, but here's something amusing.
Well, this is from the Times on Wednesday. It's about that alleged, but I think it's pretty more than alleged, Clive will tell me, affair between Sir Ken MacDonald, the Director of Public Prosecutions, and what's described as a very ambitious single barrister.
I'd leave it as alleged if I were you. They're both lawyers. So
leave it as alleged.
Yes, you're actually there witnessing it with them.
Okay, well
I think,
then
we've an unusual image to conjure.
We'll move swiftly on and keep the alleged in, but allow a little hidden agenda in the name of the chap who's been writing about her, because he's the Professor of Law at the Open University, Dr. Gary Slapper.
Thank you very much. Now let's take a look at the final scores. And most unusually, Francis and Clive have got 15, and so have Alan and Catelyn. It is a dead heat this week. And before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Times spotted by lots of you.
The Psychic Museum in York has shut because it failed to attract enough visitors. It was opened in 2003 by the astrologer Jonathan Kaner, who intends to reopen it. He said, if you're asking me when it will open up again, it's hard to say.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Green, Clive Anderson, Catherine Moran and Alan Corrin. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Rory Morrison. The chair script was written by Lucy Clark, Rodri Crooks and Simon Littlefield, with additional material by Danielle Ward. The producer was Ed Morrish.